Good evening, folks, and welcome back on this Saturday, the 17th day of April, 2021. I'm your host, Mark Hall, and this, of course, was a week where we saw so many of the great big whopping lies that we already knew were lies, simply revealed as such. For example, the Biden regime is now admitting openly that they always intended to pack the Supreme Court.
But that's not what's worrying me. It's how to do it. These things must be done delicately, or you hurt the stare.
The Biden regime also seems intent on provoking Russia into a first strike, or at least starting World War III in the Ukraine. When the Marionette-in-Chief tried to send two battleships to the area, Putin closed the Black Sea Kerch Strait until October. And oops, the regime changed their mind. For now, the Biden Navy's response was to put a mask on the Eagle emblem. If maternity flight suits don't do the trick, that'll show them who's boss. So much corruption at the top of Congress, the Biden regime, and BLM, but I repeat myself that we'd be out of time if I tried to outline all of that. More high-profile people took the poison poke and then dropped over dead, whether it's reported or not. In other words, America continues to self-destruct. Well, in any case, I found myself thinking this week about so many aspects of the literal untrammeled evil, the unbridled, you know, pick an adjective, pick a superlative. Most of us have never in our lives even remotely conceived of the kind of evil that now infests the Oval Office. It infests the halls of Congress, of most so-called higher institutions of education. Yeah, there's a great big whopping lie for you. Certainly it infests the media. It infests international. National halls of justice and the tribunals and all kinds of things that literally were kind of anathema to the God of the Bible for a long time anyway. And especially this week, right? This is the anniversary of a day when a lot of Americans celebrate their slavery to Big Brother. Big Brother wants to know how much you made. Send it in. And, of course, the entire concept is based on a completely unconstitutional twisting of, everything that was once the law. Remember when it said, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof? Well, we got rid of that a long time ago. And among the things that the Creator said was, well, dishonest weights and measures are an abomination. So did the Constitution. It used to say nothing but gold or silver coin is to be made a tender in payment of debt. There is no provision in there for Congress to do that. Certainly there's no provision for them to delegate that authority to an entity that is public and private and thus fascist. Shouldn't exist if we had a constitution anyway, talking, of course, about the Federal Reserve, which is neither federal nor does it have any reserves. And what did they set up in 1913? The unconstitutional enforcement arm, the income tax, and the IRS to enforce their money monopoly. So, yeah, all of that is being celebrated this week as good little slaves say, oh, here's how much I made. I will voluntarily surrender my Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination because if I don't sign this thing, you're going to come and throw me in jail anyway. Now, forget the fact that the Constitution says you can't be forced to self-incriminate. People do it voluntarily. That's why the income tax used to be voluntary, just like the vaccine passport will be. Ha ha. And now, of course, it's not just that you're a slave to Big Brother, but you volunteer into all kinds of other things. Slaves can't own weapons, of course. Pretty soon, with the Great Reset coming, we're going to find out that slaves, well, they won't own anything, especially not the one piece of property protected by the Second Amendment, and therefore they'll not have anything. But Big Brother says, don't worry, you'll be happy, or we'll dumb you down so much that you don't know what that means anyway. Earlier in the week, we had the anniversary of the birthday of, personally, my favorite president anyway, Thomas Jefferson. Literally, he was, I think, more renowned for what he did long before he became president. He came out of retirement, basically, because of the disgusting things he saw being done under John Adams and the Alien and Sedition Acts and so forth. I don't think he wanted to come out and go back, but he felt like he had to. In any case, certainly it was Jefferson who is most renowned for having written the Declaration of Independence, the lion's share of it. They made some important additions to what Jefferson wrote. But clearly, the bottom line, the thing upon which they all agreed, was that we hold these truths to be self-evident. Gee, folks, they're not even allowed to be taught in schools anymore. That all men are created equal, endowed by their Creator with those unalienable, cannot be leaned upon by Big Brother, rights that were granted by God, natural rights. And thus, life, liberty, and property, among other things that were later enumerated in the Bill of Rights, but they were not limited to those. Well, look where we are today. In fact, so much evil that I found myself kind of thinking, all right, here's what I need to talk about this week on the show, because ultimately, the biblical answer remains the right one. It worked for the founders from Great Britain. Come out of her and be separate. But given the level of evil, I'm going to contend that it's never been more obvious, it's never been more vital, and the hour has never been later. And therefore, I think it's important just to kind of come to grips with the reality. Now, with that in mind, I got to thinking about a famous quote. It supposedly comes from Alexis de Tocqueville and a thing called Democracy in America. You may remember the end of it. It says, America is great because she is good. And if America ever ceases to be good, she will cease to be great. Well, no argument. He was right. And that has now happened. But wait a minute. There are those that say de Tocqueville actually never did say that. On the other hand, if he didn't, he should have. He was correct. I'll get to the whole quote in a minute. But I want to start with another piece that will kind of take us there. We'll connect some dots, and I'll have several observations from different people, all of whom are seeing the same malaise, the same kinds of destruction of the rule of law, the constitutional republic, whatever it was. Some would say we never had a constitution, but one thing's for sure, we ain't got it no more if we ever did. All right, first I'm going to look at a piece that I really like from a guy that I admire and read frequently, Jim Quinn. His website is usually the burning platform, although he gets repeated elsewhere. He wrote a great piece, fairly long, and I'll touch on several aspects of it as we go through this today. It was called American Dream. From the American Dream to the American Nightmare, it begins. And he quotes the place where that line comes from. A book written in 1931 called The Epic of America by one James Truslow Adams. He coined the term American Dream. Most Americans, at least up until, say, the Obama regime, still believed the fairy tale. And no matter how humble your beginnings, paraphrases Quinn, everyone had at least a fair chance, once upon a time, to become a success in America, based on, ooh, things that are no longer allowed to be taught in school. How humble your beginnings, that doesn't matter. But your intelligence, your talent, your work ethic, all of those did matter in a society that once rewarded those who excelled, allowed them the freedom to do so, even, and actually taught them how to think and to be independent of a system that does the exact opposite. Sadly, now, says Quinn, that dream is no longer achievable for most Americans, unless you're born with the no longer silver spoon, the fake Big Brother-inspired spoon in your mouth. So our society has devolved into an oligarchy since the Epic of America was published back, what would this be, almost 90 years ago, where a powerful few rule over a woefully ignorant many. And they use propaganda, mistrust, fear, oh, lots of fear, and, of course, the iron fist. Let me read just a little bit of James Truslow Adams' famous introduction that coined that term. He said, there's also been the American dream, that dream of a land in which life should be better and richer and fuller for every man with opportunity, for each according to his ability or achievement. It's a difficult dream for the European upper classes to even interpret adequately. Too many of us ourselves have grown weary and mistrustful of it. It is not a dream of motor cars and high wages merely, but a dream of social order in which each man and each woman shall be able to attain to the fullest stature of which they are innately capable and be recognized by others for what they are. No, not whether they're white or not, or even back in those days, folks. Some would say, oh, there was racism that abounded. Yeah, no doubt, but I'll suggest it's not nearly as efficient, pervasive, and noxious as the racism that now replaces it, which is, of course, called anti-racism. All right, that American dream, he said, that's lured tens of millions of all nations to our shores in the past century. Well, now it's luring people who hate the American dream, and they want the socialist replacement. Okay, I'll skip over the rest of this. Let me get to the point of where I want to go today with some other examples from this piece by Jim Quinn. I find it, he says, terribly distressing that the American dream has now vaporized, less than a century after Adams wrote those profound and at one time true words. Question is, well, two questions. Why did the American dream turn into the American nightmare? And is there a pathway back? to the kind of country that our forefathers once gave us and that so many Americans fought and died to protect. There are a number of reasons why the country's fallen from its original conception of a proud, defiant republic. Most idiots, ignorant, dumbed-down Americans, how's that, today don't even know what the term means. They think we were a democracy, which, of course, the word does not even appear in the Constitution, nor in the Bill of Rights, nor in the Declaration of Independence. And when the founders wrote about it, they didn't have kind things to say. You know, such democracies were ever turbulent and as short in their lives as violent in their deaths, the devil's own government, and so on. Now we're a dying empire of depravity, decay, debt, and decadence, says Quinn. And furthermore, the conspiratorial creation of the Federal Reserve, along with the implementation of their enforcement arm, the Fed, the IRS, and the income tax in 1913, marked a truly destructive turning point for America. Two choices implemented by greedy banksters, sleazy politicians, put the country on that road to perdition. They centralized the power of money printing. By the way, money is never allowed to be paper in the Constitution. Like I said, it's supposed to be gold or silver coin minted. And the value, in other words, how many fiat dollars? Well, they weren't even fiat back when we had a Constitution. How many dollars are equivalent to 1 ounce of silver or 1 ounce of gold was the purview of Congress. Result now, though, a 96% or more, most people, including the shadow stats of John Williams, would say it's a lot more than that, but most people would say at least 96% decline since that time. Those are the official numbers. In other words, what was once a dollar, well, today it takes about 24 times or more. 26 times or more, actually, if you believe the official numbers, dollars, to buy what a dollar used to. Our world is now ruled by a tyrannical few, you know that. The deep state, writes Quinn, is no longer a loony conspiracy theory, but the reality of how this country is now controlled and run. And despite all of his flaws, he says, the four-year reign of President Donald Trump tore the curtain away and revealed the vile creatures wielding their traitor's power within the D.C. swamp. These despicable vermin, you know the names, Obamas, Clintons, Comeys, Clappers, Brennan, Soros, Bloomberg, Gates, Pelosi, Biden, and so forth, conducted a coup against the duly elected president, ultimately drove him from office, and we can spend hours talking about that, but you know the story. And what commenced, therefore, in 1913 came to fruition in at least January of 2021, as now the goal, openly stated, the Great Reset is, you will own nothing, or you will be happy, or else. And they who own everything rule by dictate, witness the corrupt puppet in the White House, and that truncheon is always within ready reach, too. The most distressing aspect, says Quinn, of this Great Reset, is how a vast swath of the populace are still unwillingly beseeching their overlords to impose more of the hair of the dog, more restrictions, more mandates, more censorship, to accelerate their takeover, unconstitutional as it obviously is, of a once free nation. The weaponized annual flu has been given a booga, booga, booga scary name, and a continuous marketing propaganda campaign using frightening terms like cases as opposed to people that are actually sick, double mutant, and UK variant. Doomsayers like Fauci et al. Have convinced most Americans to trade their freedom for a little temporary security, and it's a false hope besides. They've been convinced, he says, to wear face diapers, muzzles, despite scientific data, all of which proves they're not only useless against viruses, which are much smaller than the little porous holes in even the N95 masks, especially the fabric ones, but that doesn't mean there aren't all kinds of other toxins that people are breathing in. And, of course, the masks are actually harmful. You get less O2 and more CO2. Your bloodstream suffers. So does your immune system. But isn't that great if your goal is to, infect a lot more people. And that now those same dumbed down and now infected people are just lining up to be guinea pigs for an experimental gene therapy rushed to market without any testing at all. And with unknown, but some would say really they are known, and they're increasingly obvious, long-term side effects. It generates billions, maybe trillions, though, for big pharma. They have zero liability for any deaths or injuries caused by their concoctions. And it's a great racket. if you're one of the chosen few who gets to kill those that you want dead anyway and profit in the process. I mean, imagine if Adolf had been able to actually make more money than he did in the concentration camps. Oh, yeah, work makes you free, but well, what's being done in America doesn't make you free, certainly doesn't make you safer, it does make you deader. And I've spent some time in the last few weeks, folks, comparing the things that Adolf and the Third Reich did to the things that Biden and Soros et al. And the Fourth Reich are doing. And the bottom line is there literally isn't any comparison. The Fourth Reich has better technology, better propaganda, a far more pervasive surveillance state, and in every way, shape, and form, they're able to kill better, destroy better, and to wage war on the peons better. Furthermore, says Jim Quinn, back to the piece here, the educational system has been part and parcel of making all this happen. It's been an embarrassing failure for decades. Hundreds of billions of dollars of taxes have been wasted on useless unionized teachers, useless curriculum, bloated administrations, math and reading scores plummet. If you were to pick up, and this is not anything that people haven't known for decades, the number I've heard is one grade level about every 10 years or so has been lost. So he puts it this way. If you pick up a fifth grade math or rhetoric textbook, I bet most college freshmen today wouldn't even know what rhetoric is. From about 1850, you would see what today is considered college-level material. Remember the Beverly Hillbillies? Jethro Bodine graduated, I think it was 8th grade, maybe 6th grade, but even back in the 70s, Jethro Bodine's lousy state of education would be considered probably better than your basic far-left PhD at most institutions of higher indoctrination today's. And I'm not joking, even though the Beverly Hillbillies was funnier than what you see at Stanford or Berkeley or UCLA or, for that matter, most of these so-called institutions. He quotes Charles McKay, who wrote the book Extraordinary Popular Delusions and the Madness of Crowds. Man, it has been well said, think in herds. They go mad in herds, it would seem, and they only recover their senses slowly, one at a time. Well, any way you slice it, every fact, book, historical event, mathematical equation may be at our fingertips via the web. You don't know if it's true or not, and steadily with Gulag and Apple and all these other purveyors of what will be called the only truth, doing what Fahrenheit 451 took firemen to do. Remember, they go out and burn books. That's the title of the famous book, sci-fi book by Ray Bradbury. Well, not sci-fi, it's previous history at this point. But they don't have to burn the books anymore, they just change them from a computer terminal. Meanwhile, the public education system is certainly not designed to encourage things that once would have been thought to be important, like learning, individuality, critical thinking, or even developing questioning citizens who were curious about things. It's instead been purposely, and I'd say perfectly designed to produce non-thinking, obedient, rule-following, non-questioning consumers who do as they're told by the banksters and their puppets. Before all of this and the most recent humiliating descent into madness brought about by the idiocy of wokeness, gender absurdities, censorship of speech, the cancel culture, and anti-racist tripe, primary educator, educator of the year and so forth, John Taylor Gatto, has been decrying what's going on in so-called public education for decades. 50% of college students are not intellectually capable of meeting minimum requirements for success, right? Much less the American dream. Picture some of the degrees that are not considered to be serious, that are absolutely idiotic. Gender studies, feminist theory, pop culture, African-American studies. You know, it occurred to me as I was reading through this list, when I was in college, we used to joke at an engineering school about worthless majors. Now, we weren't just talking about some of the humanities, which at least beat the heck out of gender studies and pop culture. But we had our own favorite. Somebody was going to get a degree that was not worth much. Well, it was a degree in underwater basket weaving. And I frequently have used that over the intervening years. But it occurred to me as I was thinking about this show, you know, at least if somebody got a degree in underwater basket weaving, when it was all said and done, they might actually be able to make something. That beats the heck out of most of these others, where, in fact, if they unlearn what they've learned, they're back to being totally ignorant. Meanwhile, given what's gone on in the K through 12, 12 system, and I won't go through all the details, he says, understand that when boys act like boys, they're now diagnosed by the feminazis who run the school as having ADHD, and they're immediately drugged into submission. Gatto wrote this, I've noticed a fascinating phenomenon in my 30 years of teaching. Schools and schooling are increasingly irrelevant to the great enterprises of the planet. No one believes anymore that scientists are trained in science classes, or politicians in civics classes, or poets in English classes. The truth is, schools don't really teach anything except how to obey orders. Well, obviously, the rot in the miseducation system, I call it the system of higher indoctrination, is not a mistake. It's a calculated goal of the overlords who want obedient, easily manipulated, non-questioning, conformist, robotic consumers who believe debt equals wealth. That, a boy is not born with a penis or a girl with, you can, because those things don't matter. They whack them off, they cut them, they inject hormones, and it only matters what you feel like today. If you feel like a pink unicorn, well, I are one. And forget the grammar. Can't even spell it right. The entire pandemic, for that matter, is just another symptom of dumbing down Americans to the detriment of the country. It's an essential cog by the elitists in their wealth-seeking ventures, raising barely sentient sheep who can then be herded in any desired direction. I saw a great piece written by one of the libertarians, the international man, who noted that, Big Brother now treats you as if you are a milk cow, and they milk you. Pretty soon they're going to want to treat you like a not dairy cow, a beef cow. And that, of course, is before they decide that you cows aren't even allowed to eat beef anymore. So the dumbing down amounts to take the poke. Country's been on a downward spiral since at least 2001, using debt to give the appearance of economic growth and rising financial markets to convince people that the charade is real. But the rot within has hollowed out the Tree of Liberty, and the coming financial and other storms will deal a final death blow to this once noble experiment started a couple centuries ago. He quotes Frederick Bastiat here, and again, most dumbed down kids today with a degree in some or other useless major won't even understand this. Quote, when plunder becomes a way of life for a group of men living together in society, they create for themselves, in the course of time, and they have, a legal system that authorizes it and a moral code that glorifies it. All you got to do when you observe a senseless, irrational policy or mandate, need to ask yourself, here's the Latin term, and again, most of those dumbed-down ones won't recognize the Latin, but I'll mention it, quo bene, who benefits? Who benefited from the 9/11 hysteria, the 2008 financial crisis, from the faux COVID pandemic? The answer's obvious, the moneyed interests, the military-industrial propaganda and now big pharma complex, the surveillance state, the FedGov bureaucracy, Wall Street banksters, mega corporations and their crooked CEOs and so forth. Who didn't benefit? Well, especially wage-earning taxpayers, small business owners, senior citizens, young people, poor people, and the unborn future generations. So there's a consistent theme here, and essentially he's right. We've gone from the American dream to the American nightmare, and one of the key elements to this, and we'll pick it up here when we get back, was how Big Brother's minions, those minions of now the Communist Chinese Party, of Satan, but maybe there's no difference, who walk in men's shoes, have used fear to achieve their treacherous aims. In 9/11, fear produced what they'd already planned on, the Patriot Act. And in 2008, it was used to bail out criminal Wall Street banksters through TARP and never-ending QE to infinity. And now the coup de grace has been the plandemic, man-made bioweapon, and all the fear that goes with it. To paper over the crumbling financial system with trillions more debt, more mega corporations dominating everything, and eliminating all of the small businesses, hundreds of thousands of them, that stood in their way, along with things like free speech and dissent through big tech censorship. So this is where we are, folks, and understand that what we ought to do at this point may be obvious, but it's certainly not intended to be easy. And we'll pick it up there when we get back.
The devil's howl. Whose side are you on?
All right, we are back, folks. This is Mark Kalf, and I'm talking about, I guess once again, some pretty difficult things, arguably, because either we face up to those difficult things or we continue, as the story here puts it on the Burning Platform and Jim Quinn, from the American Dream to the American Nightmare. And I'll go one step further. I have been for quite a while. Suggest that, no, it's not merely a nightmare that Big Brother has been planning on pushing people into. It's outright death. And, of course, it is a literal hell on earth. And they're working really hard on that score. Says Quinn, this current formula is to create mass hysteria. They're using the waste stream media, their mouthpieces. They spread fear and misinformation while suppressing facts and truth. The idea is to steer the herd towards the slaughterhouses. And some would think that's hyperbole. Folks, it's not. You can look at Deagle and see that they are literally promising that by 2025, hey, the American population is forecast to go down from about 325 or 30 million to just around 100 million. That means somebody's going to get rid of, by hook or by crook or by poke, about 200 million plus people. And I'll suggest they're doing a damned fine job of it. And furthermore, the Great Reset is coming. Once you own nothing and you're told that you're happy, the Great Reset will have been accomplished, and it's all about the welfare of humanity. But the American nightmare that we're now descending into isn't solely the fault of the globalist cabal. Obviously, once independent, self-sufficient individualists, in other words, Americans, who populated this country have become dependent, government-reliant, materialistic, quivering shadows of these strong, knowledgeable, and, yeah, God-fearing patriots and frontiersmen who created this country. In the name of trading essential liberty for a little temporary security, the American people have allowed Big Brother, and that's a term I'm going to use, to accumulate complete control over every aspect of their lives. And again, he goes back to 1913, when, of course, the first real wooden stake was shoved. Well, arguably the 14th Amendment goes back before that. We certainly saw a number of pieces, but 1913 was a particularly banner year anyway. That wooden stake was shoved into the heart of free enterprise. You cannot have free trade, honest contracts with dishonest weights and measures. 245 years ago, writes Quinn, our founding fathers declared that we all had those things, those unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, the idea of owning property, and that would include your body, which they could not tell you. You had to mask or muzzle or poke, but are now. These rights have not just been restricted, compromised, and bastardized. Liberties have been ruthlessly constrained. Government tracks you through your social security number, monitors your phone, internet communications, taxes everything you earn, dictates the rules for your education, healthcare, business, and 1,000 other daily activities, and now is going to take away your God-given, once constitutionally protected right to defend yourselves from what they intend to do next. Pretty soon you won't be able to work, and they're going to poke drugs into your body, or worse, you won't be able to enter your business without your vaccine passport, your papers, and there's no BITTA. It's not a stretch to even see non-vaxxers being sent to special camps until they comply. Again, Adolf Hitler's got nothing on the new America with a K. Opportunities for each according to their ability or achievement has been replaced by, from each according to his ability, to each according to his need. And ironically, that may be one of the few things that the public indoctrinees still understand. They'll think it's in the Constitution rather than the Communist Manifesto, though. There's only one route back, writes Jim Quinn, to the American dream. It's wrought with obstacles and an entrenched enemy ready to ambush those even trying to come out of her or a embark on the journey. Most are going to be unwilling to make the sacrifices necessary. And literally, he says, it involves the following. Now, I'll, of course, go another step further, but he's on the right track and goes almost as far as Scripture does. It involves shared beliefs, values, customs, traditions, respect for the family unit, and an unspoken understanding of right and wrong. In other words, you might even say the Torah written on our hearts, or at least the kind of thing we can read in the Bible and study and recognize, all of which would dictate the actions and responsibilities of a good citizen. Obviously, you can see Soros, Antifa, BLM, the Democrats and Republicans in both houses of the criminally evil Congress all doing the same thing, essentially undermining what were once called truth, justice, and the American way. You name it. John Adams' quote appears in this article. It's one that I've frequently noted. He puts the whole thing in here, and I love it, so I'll read it. We have no government armed in power capable of contending with human passions, writes the second president, unbridled by morality and religion. Our Constitution was made only for a religious and moral people. It is wholly inadequate for the governance of any other. We've ignored, says Quinn, our obligation to the past and the futures. Yeah, the Founding Fathers created a republic, imperfect as it may have been. Ben Franklin knew its future. I've quoted this one frequently, too. And he noted it depended upon people administering it well. He said that it would probably last for a couple of centuries or so, and then they would fall into despotism, being essentially not ready for anything else. They didn't want a national religion, but that's been misrepresented. Remember, it was the difference whether you're a Congregationalist or a Presbyterian or a Methodist, not whether you were something that was antithetical to religion. I've talked about that a long time. In other words, the idea of Islam is completely incompatible with the very concept of the Declaration of Independence and the constitutional rights protected. All you got to do is study it a little bit and realize that no. In one case, as Jefferson said, I have sworn eternal enmity to any form of tyranny over the mind of man. The God who gave us life gave us liberty. He gave us a choice. There are so-called religions that don't give you a choice. You don't like it, they'll sacrifice your kids, they'll tear out your heart, they will kill you. They will subject you to the dhimmi. They will do whatever it is they darn well want to you because you don't have God-given rights. Matter of fact, they don't even acknowledge that God. And come to think of it, neither does the new big brother. Only a people with a strong moral backbone can be trusted, in other words, says Quinn, to honor the Constitution. And here's the bottom line. Sadly, bloodshed will be required in any effort to regain control of our country. We've had the Communist Revolution, folks. Unless there is a counter-revolution, it's all downhill, and the road to hell is paved with exactly what we're seeing from here. Time grows short. And I'll read one last line from here. He ends by quoting none other than the now late George Carlin and his comment on the American dream. Remember, there's a club and you ain't in it was one of the things he said in the same speech. But bottom line, what was called the American dream, he said, it's called the American dream because you have to be asleep to believe in it, at least anymore. And, of course, he wrote that quite a few years ago at this point. Well, back to Alexis de Tocqueville. I began by promising that I would mention this quote. Turns out that it might not be exactly a quote. I remember several years ago looking in Democracy in America, electronic version, seeing if it was in there, and evidently it's not. It's been attributed to de Tocqueville since at least the 1880s or so, although people are saying, no, we can't find the original. We don't know if he ever said it. May have been a compilation of things, but I'll put it this way. Whether or not de Tocqueville actually said it, whether or not it was in Democracy in America, and it's not, it's still a good quote, and it's still worth noting. Even General Dwight David Eisenhower, in one of his campaign speeches, frequently quoted, he couldn't recognize exactly the citation either, so he just attributed it to a, quote, wise philosopher who came to this country a long time ago. That's one dodge. Anyway, it goes like this, and if you haven't heard it, you should. said allegedly to Tocqueville, "I sought for the greatness and genius of America in her commodious harbors, her ample rivers. It wasn't there. I sought for the greatness and genius of America in her fertile fields, her boundless forests, and it wasn't there. I sought for the greatness and genius of America in her rich mines and her vast world commerce, and it was not there. I sought for the greatness and genius of America in her public school system. Well, it sure as hell wasn't there even then. And her institutions of learning, and they were, by the way, at least more honest for probably 100 years after that. Nope, it wasn't there either. I sought for the greatness and genius of America in her Democratic Congress and her matchless Constitution, and it was not there. And again, it is not there anymore. Not until, he said, I went into the churches of America and I heard her pulpits flame with righteousness that I understand the secret of her genius and power. Here you go. Here's the quote. America is great because America is good. And if America ever ceases to be good, she will cease to be great. Can't argue with the logic. Can't argue with the fact. Now, again, those words don't appear in Democracy in America, and they may not appear anywhere. But what is interesting is you can see why it was people would have thought de Tocqueville wrote it, because these quotes are from that book. He said, upon my arrival in the United States, the religious aspect of the country was first thing that struck my attention. Longer I stayed there, the more I perceived the great political consequences resulting from this new state of things. He compares it to his native France, where he says, I've always seen the spirit of religion and the spirit of freedom marching in opposite directions. This was not long after the French Revolution. But in America, I found they were intimately united, and they reigned in common over the same country. Religion, he said, in America must be regarded as the foremost of the political institutions of that country. For if it does not impart a taste for freedom, it at least facilitates the use of it. Indeed, it is in this same point of view that the inhabitants of the United States themselves look upon religious belief. He said later, I don't know whether all Americans have this sincere faith in their religion, for who can search the human heart? But I'm certain that they hold it to be indispensable for the maintenance of, listen to this choice of terminology, Republican institutions. This opinion is not particular or peculiar to a class of citizens or a party, but it belongs to the whole nation and to every rank of society. And he goes on to say that this is a world where Christian religion retains a greater influence over the souls of men than any other country on the planet. And, quote, there can be no greater proof of its utility and its conformity to human nature than its influence, that it's powerfully felt, than that its influence is powerfully felt over the most enlightened and free nation on the earth. And he gives this account. Now, this, too, is interesting, and it sets the stage for kind of the final few things I want to say today to wrap things up. He gave the account of a criminal case in New York, where he talked about a witness he saw, happened to be called in the county of Chester, state of New York. He declared to the court he did not believe in the existence of God or in the immortality of the human soul. And the judge then refused to admit his evidence on the grounds that the witness had destroyed beforehand any and all confidence the court could have in what he was about to say. This newspaper, newspapers related the fact without any further comment. He quotes the New York Spectator, August 23, 1831, and how it ruled. And basically, who would believe a witness like that was the bottom line. And who would believe, folks, that a country like that could descend into a country like this one? Answer, those of us who have seen it. And by the way, if we could read history or if we read scripture, we can see exactly how it happened and why, because there are consequences for rebellion to the creator of the universe. Now, I want to wrap things up with just a couple comments. This was a piece that I saw in a leftist rag out of Great Britain, The Guardian. And as you might suspect, there are some things in here that represent the 80-20 rule. 80% truth, 20% lies, or maybe the opposite ratio. But in any case, it tells you that if you mix truth with lie, you can get away with a whole lot. And this is I won't quote the name of the author, but it's called Brain Fog. And that sounds like something all of us have seen. How trauma, uncertainty, and isolation have affected our minds and memory. Yes, it begins before the plandemic, you don't spell it right. A psychoanalyst named Josh Cohen, an and his patients might come into his consulting room, lie down on the couch, and start talking about the traffic or the weather or some person they saw on the tube. Now they appear on the computer screen. They tell him about brain fog. They express their urgency of being unable to concentrate in meetings or to follow intricately plotted TV programs, said Cohen. There's a sense of debilitation, of losing ordinary facility with everyday life, of forgetfulness, and a kind of de-skilling. And it goes on to describe, oh, gee, how could this have happened? We might all agree, though, that the uncertainty, it says in conclusion to a whole lot of stuff I'm going to skip right over, the uncertainty of the last year has been quite stressful, more so for some than for others. Yeah, especially if you're in the UK or in New York City or the left coast where Achtung, the mask will be worn, and so forth. You'll be dumbed down, and now you will prove it by wearing your muzzle like a good little slave. Now, what's interesting to me, folks, I went through the article, and I looked for certain words to see if there might be any discussion about brain fog. Could it, for example, be related to a mask? Well, the word mask doesn't appear at all, much less things like dumbing down. Nor is there any reference to oxygen or O2 deprivation, nor to hypoxia or hypercapnia, which means too much CO2 in the bloodstream. Nor are there vaccine issues associated with neurological self-destruction effects that at least some articles, mostly in the alternative press, say are already affecting about 30% of the guinea pigs who were taken the poke. In other words, you take the poke and, it looks like normal cognitive decline. It's just accelerated beyond your wildest dreams. Nor, for that matter, is there even any mention of environmental issues, what might be coming down from the clouds or in the food or the genetically modified crap that people are eating. None of that. Now, instead, they focus on this. Yes, the last year has been stressful. Another psychologist or psychiatrist or somebody, this is a professor of biological psychiatry at King's College, explains that our brain transmit messages to our immune and endocrine systems, and they respond in the same way that they did in early humans 2 million years ago on the African savanna. And no, it's not just the fact that you're having to school your kids at home that's stressful, but in those days it was a fear of being eaten by a large animal. The heart beats faster. Now, this at least is part of the truth, folks. The heart beats faster so that we can run away. Adrenaline, in other words, pumps into the system. Inflammation is initiated by the immune system to protect against bacterial infections in case we're bitten or poked. The hormone cortisol is released to focus our attention on the predator at hand and nothing else. Studies have demonstrated that a dose of cortisol will lower a person's attention, concentration, and memory for their immediate environment. And this biopsychologist explains this fog that people feel is just one manifestation of this mechanism. We've lost the function of those mechanisms, but they're still there. They're useful for fighting a lion, not so useful for remembering where we put our glasses. Now, I went through this piece because, hey, folks, guess what? As the previous article pointed out, you are being manipulated. Fear is being used not just to dumb people down in a long-term sense, but in a very short-term sense. Got to convince you to take the poke, to destroy your businesses, to destroy your families, your children's futures. Oh, yeah, and make sure that you destroy your immune system and your ability to even think. That's why it's helpful to wear the muzzle and get you pretty well primed for what we're going to do anyway. Says the author, when I've experienced brain fog, I've seen it as a distraction, kind of like laziness, tried to push through to force myself to concentrate. But listening to all these experts, I'm starting to think about it differently. Perhaps it's a signal we should listen to. Well, exactly, says one of the experts. It's our body and our brain telling us we're pushing it too much at the moment. Well, no, folks, I think it's the opposite. People haven't pushed it for a long time, and now it's useless. Here's the interesting comment in here. One of these people, the first one, Cohen, says the phenomenon of brain fog is an experience of one of the most disturbing aspects of the unconscious. He quotes Freud, the idea that there's one force in us that pushes us towards life, another that pulls us towards death. Well, now the death force comes from the swamp, comes from Hollywood, comes from Madison Avenue. The life drive, says Cohen, impels us to create, make new connections with others, seek the expansion of life. But the death drive urges a kind of contraction away from life into a kind of stasis or entropy. Folks, all you got to do is look at what people put on their bodies in the form of tattoos. Look at the things that kids hang on their walls and ask yourself, are they choosing life like Scripture says, or are they choosing death? With brain fog, says Cohen, we're seeing an atrophy of liveliness. People just drag. Freud had a word for this, trogheit, translated as sluggishness, but it literally translates as dragginess. We could understand brain fog as an encounter with our death drive, part of which, in the words of Cohen, is going in the opposite direction of awareness and sparkiness towards inanimacy and shutting down. I'll go a step further, folks. It's satanic. It literally is a force that impels people to do exactly what Big Brother wants them to choose death. Finally, Wilfred Bion says that we have a will sometimes to know something about ourselves and our lives, even if that knowledge is profoundly painful. He called it being a K or in a K state. But there's also a powerful will in the other direction, not to know, to defend against the awareness that might be painful. It's called minus K. And I wonder, says the author, kind of drinking the Kool-Aid, if the plandemic has in reality been some of us feeling that the truth is too horrific to bear. The uncertainty, the deaths, the traumas, the precarity. Yes, take the poke and die, I guess. We've unconsciously chosen to live in the misty, murky brain fog of minus K rather than to suffer the true pain and horror of our situation. Well, there's the 80-20 rule, folks, and the great big whopping lie. The truth is, the author is ignoring the truth. Yeah, it is painful to acknowledge. There is, in fact, a Fourth Reich in progress. There are people, the banksters, those who serve another master, the prince of this world, the bad guy, old Scratch, who seek to, what, come, but kill and destroy. They intend to kill hundreds of millions. If they get their way, it will be billions. And they're going to make trillions in the process. Oh, yeah, that's a painful reality. Easier just to take the poke and die than to recognize that, oh, no, Scripture warned us about this. We've been told to choose life and that, in fact, ultimately, the choice is going to be so tough that unless you take the mark and serve this other satanic force, you'll not even be allowed to buy or sell. Well, guess what? We can see it from here. All of the pieces are coming together. I won't close the way this story does because I think it's kind of disgusting. What I'm going to mention instead are just a few things that point to the elements of this. I've already talked about the economic ones. Here's a quick story from Zero Hedge. Just came out right before showtime. This was the worst quarter it set for Treasury since 1980, but there's at least one new big buyer. Guess what? For the fourth straight month, Communist China bought rather than sold U.S. Treasuries in February, the latest period for which they now have data. That's the biggest holding since July 2019, longest buying streak since 2017. And what an amazing coincidence. What happened 4 months ago when this was... Oh, yeah, that was the rigged election. They pulled it off. They got their puppet in the White House. So it's time to start buying treasuries and buying up the carcass of the United States, given what they know was coming. Now, as for the rest of us, as to the come out of her purse part of this equation, I'm going to suggest, at least on the economic scale, we have a clear choice. I have a story here I'm not going to have time to do about Egon von Graertz talking about the recent meltdown, $30 billion of something called Archegos derivatives. They went up in smoke. They cost some of the uber leveraged players, you know the names, big banksters, Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, Credit Suisse, Nomura. They lost that $30 billion. What happens when the entire multiple quadrillion-dollar worldwide derivative bubble comes down? Well, you can guess. And the answer is, you know what? There really is a price to pay for walking in rebellion to the creator of the universe. And for those that have eyes to see and ears to hear, that choice needs to be made now. Von Graertz goes through the numbers and points out, look, in the entire world, there's only about a little less than 200,000 tons of gold, valued current dollars at $11 trillion. That represents less than 1/100 of the current value of gold, at least in real dollars, if, in fact, you were trying to back the currency at only 1 in 5 or 20%. In other words, what that really means is the real value of gold when the paper collapse happens, and you already knew this, is infinity. For those that are looking to come out of her, well, obviously, we try to do so in a spiritual sense. We try to do as best we can in a physical sense, get out of the cities, and you certainly need to be prepared for the economic sense as well. World War III is coming, too. That's going to be tougher, but at least you have to be able to feed yourself and be in a safer place when we get there. How about a community made up of people who understand how to exchange for what is real, even what's constitutional, and what is right? The kinds of things that John Adams talked about, a constitution that's fit only for the governance of an educated and moral people. Well, folks, if we haven't come out and are not in the company of educated, moral, and God-fearing people, we're going to find, and soon now, that we have a heck of a lot worse problem than even World War III on our hands.